Hey there, you're with Disembodied Podcast. This is Evie Escher. This week, I've got Michael Spramuli with me. Michael is a data-driven workplace personality expert who also happens to be a professional astrologer with 30 years' experience in interpreting astrology charts. His journey with astrology began with a reading from a professional astrologer before he started grad school. It was a life-changing experience for him. His expertise lies in uncovering individual opportunity trends for the people he reads for by interpreting how transiting planets impact their birth chart. With his knowledge of astrology, Michael likes to tap a deeper understanding of this ancient subject in a modern way that goes beyond the generalized and pop version found in magazines and online. What really sets Michael apart from other astrologers is his scientific approach to the subject. He reviews and participates in current vibrational astrology research, which is happening at a brisk pace nowadays. This research is shedding new light on the underlying principles of astrology, along with the math and geometry used in its calculations. The recent scientific validation of some of astrology's theories through research is helping to bridge the gap between traditional astrology and modern scientific understanding. So we're not going over any specific charts in this interview, but we are talking about generally how vibrational astrology has been a force in recent years, and it's not the same as Vedic astrology or sidereal astrology. So this is a little different maybe for those of you who are versed in sidereal or Vedic astrology. So sit tight. Here we go.
Michael, welcome to Disembodied Podcast. It's great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I have a lot of things to ask you because you have, you're an astrologist, I guess.
That's interesting. That's a whole debate right there. I don't know. That word goes back to ancient times, but you can call me whatever you want, astrologer, astrologist. I do astrology.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. So you have more of a scientific approach. Maybe Yes. We should get into that in the beginning. Like, you know, I'm familiar with Vedic astrology, mm-hmm. the ancient Indian system. And, you know, supposedly people were kind of into astrology around the world, not just in certain places.
Right.
We seem to have some evidence of that with Stonehenge and all sorts of, you know, monuments that are still around. So where's the science going with it these days?
Sure. So you're absolutely right. I mean, astrology is traced back to at least 2000 years ago, maybe even a little bit before that. And astrology up until recently has been based on this archetype type of structure. So, you know, the moon represents our mother, the Saturn, the planet can represent our father. And there were these archetypal connections that obviously have had some meaning to them that have withstood the test of time throughout thousands of years. But recently, there's been a branch of astrology that has been incubating for, I'd say, 40 years. And within the last 10 years or so, it's finally started to see the light of day. And that is vibrational astrology. And vibrational astrology is different in that it's not an archetypal-based system. It's based on looking at what energy components each of the planets regulate. And that's not something that just pulled out of the air, because VA is the only type of astrology that's based in an evidence-based paradigm. In other words, there is research that has been done and is continuing to be done. In fact, I'm part of a VA research team where we're looking at using scientific methods, what holds up and what doesn't really hold up. And that appealed to me very much so because of my background as a former clinician in clinical psych, but at the core of my work for the past 25 years, in addition to being a somewhat underground astrologer until recently, is I'm a personality profiler. So I work with companies to help them identify top performers based on their personality using assessments and what have you. So I'm a data guy. I've always been had a foot in both worlds, the spiritual world and the data-driven world. And I've always loved astrology, but I have a hard time when we look for a meaning of something and it's like, well, this planet is in this house and that should represent this. And then you say to the person, you know, is that the case? And they say, no, well, then we need to go look at the rulership of that planet and see what house it's in. And before you know it, you're running all over the chart trying to crowbar something in, maybe even finding the final dispositor, for those of you who are astrology savvy out there, desperately hoping to make a connection. VA doesn't work that way. VA has very hard and fast rules as far as what each planet does and how they interact with one another creates the various energy patterns to show us simply what is the optimal energy flow. So probably a way long of an answer, but I get excited about this stuff, as you can tell. So that's kind of what got me now full force into the astrology world, because finally it's being studied correctly. There are ways to study astrology that academicians who don't know astrology, you can't study something you don't know. And sun signs, the data has proven, while they have a little bit of influence, you know, such as Aries, Taurus, Gemini, going around the whole zodiac, but they're not nearly as important as we have been led to believe over the years. It's the planets that drive everything, and the signs may give it a little bit of color. So I did a reading for someone recently, and I didn't mention signs once, and they said, wow, I've had a bunch of readings over the years, but I've never had it done this way. It's just a different approach. Not saying that it's better, but it's better for me because it enables me to blend the spiritual with the science. And that's one of the tenets in VA. We're not excluding things. You know, VA is like, it accounts for everything, spirituality, math, science, the whole nine yards. It's not, you're either spiritual or academic or research-based. It encompasses all of those elements.
Okay, so what would be the difference between like a standard natal chart that, you know, I think I've had it done a couple of times in the past through, I think, Canopus software even. I had that a long time ago as well on my computer. I don't anymore. But what would be the difference between that chart and a vibrational astrology chart?
Excellent question. Well, everything starts with your natal chart. And the natal chart, just to get everyone up to speed, is a snapshot of the sky of the heavenly bodies at the very moment you came into Earth on this planet, which is why time is so important, because just a couple of minutes could shift things around. So we start with the natal chart, as most astrologers do. But the thing about vibrational astrology is we deal with these different vibrations, or another term for them could be octaves, where we're looking at where the planets form different angular relationships, also known as aspects, but we can do that in different vibrations, meaning the eighth vibration is sort of the real core definition of an individual. It's really the guts of who and what they are. And that's done by theoretically zooming in to different parts of the chart, where we're able to see how these different vibrations have various configurations in them versus some don't. And the vibrations almost are, in a loose way, they're similar to houses, meaning they represent different departments or categories of life. So eight is that core essence. The ninth vibration is how you tune into community. And this is all, everything I'm saying has had validation studies done behind it. This is not just coming out of thin air. There have been the first 32 harmonics or vibrations, there's been a ton of studies done to show what goes on in those vibrations. So if someone, for example, is feeling, you know, I've got this burning desire in me to come up with something new and change the world, and, you know, how that may show up, who knows? They may be a technology discovery, or they may want to, you know, do something in the area of helping others succeed, or what have you. But we can look at that 13th vibration, for example, and see what's going on there. Do you have a lot of potential energy in that 13th vibe that can help you get to that path of changing the world or making a new discovery? Or do your gifts lie elsewhere? So it enables us to get a lot more specific and much further away from generalizations.
And what is it scientifically that's actually happening, like when you're born and these planets are in certain positions? Is there some sort of magnetic pull on your being that is creating some of this? Or
so here's the theory, and I'm very deliberate in using the term theory, because we're finding out new stuff at this point now, like every couple of months, because there's an army of people starting to research this, and VA is really starting to gain some traction and popularity. So here's the theory. Each planet regulates a specific process and energy in us as individuals. So when we're born, there's that unique constellation based on the planetary placements. And when I say planets, I'm also including sun and moon. Someone sent me a note on social media and said, you know, they're not planets. I said, yeah, I do. But astrologers tend to lump things together. They're luminaries technically, but sun through Pluto are in a specific pattern in our birth chart. Think of that as almost like our serial number because it's one of a kind. And the idea is we have a certain base amount of energy circuits to work with, more than we'll ever use in a lifetime. And that sets us up to have certain parts of life be very easy and flowing in some areas, maybe not so easy and not so smooth in other areas. So that's where you work from as a starting point. How you use astrology moving forward beyond that is we always look to see, all right, what's the natal placements? What are the vibrational placements? Where are the strongest vibrations? And then what's happening in the sky? Because as the planets move around and form aspects, which are, again, angular relationships in the sky to where they were positioned in our chart, it creates additional circuits, which is why we go through these different types of cycles. So the whole crux of VA is we've got our basic energy cycles and circuits to work from. And then when looking at transits for timing purposes, we can see what is activating those circuits, what may be downplaying some of them. So we're able to look at that combined energy, and that's what enables us to help a person get some insight.
Yeah, that's a pretty thorough answer. And I noticed that you do business astrology, like for founding a business, you can get a chart for that, right?
Sure. Yep.
Does it take into account your own natal chart as well?
So there's a couple of ways I work with business owners, and people say, well, why are you qualified to work with businesses? Because I've run one for the past 25 years. I've been a small business owner working with a variety of small to mid-sized companies, and bringing the astrology to that adds a whole nother layer of dimension. And there's a couple of things we look at in businesses. If a business is already established, I'll always ask for the date and approximate time of incorporation. The time for a business isn't as critical as a person because it's a different entity from the standpoint. It's not moving through life in the same way as a person does. But we'll get that date of incorporation, which in essence is like the birth date. And then we can look at the time that you formed that business entity, what was going on in the sky, and then that could give us some insight as to what's coming down the pike down the road. In addition to that, we can incorporate the birth chart of the owners or operators of that business and compare the two to find out, all right, here's what some strengths are in your business. Here's what the business is going to require. Where are you matched so that you can just go and do those things easily and naturally? And those areas where you might not be as good of a match, that's what you need to have other people do, employees or subcontracted out or have outsourced type of staff. So we could combine multiple charts to get a more thorough description of what energy patterns are at play.
Okay, so that's synastry, right? When you're comparing charts?
Synastry is typically a term that's used when we're looking at comparing folks in relationships. It could be platonic or romantic. But yes, by definition, that would be a form of synastry as far as blending those charts. And there's various techniques we can use. We can do a composite chart that kind of plots out the differences in the business and the individual. I keep hitting my microphone. Sorry about that. We can look at the charts individually, but when we're looking across charts for compatibility or areas where there may be some disconnects, synastry would certainly summarize that nicely.
You know, I have kind of a random, weird question.
Ask me anything, as long as it's not my social security number.
No, not that. So I have a friend from India who told me that it was very common for every kid to get a full natal chart and a reading, you know, at birth, pretty much. The parents, I think, get the reading for the kid. And I don't know, first of all, this was some years ago. I don't know that it's so commonly done now, but I would imagine it is still somewhat. So with that little kid, what I was going to ask is, do parents ever ask for like a natal chart for their kids? And then also like a synastry chart of how they're going to interact with their children. Because I think that's a very long-term relationship.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, much longer often than your romantic partner. Sometimes those romance years don't go very long, but you're going to be associated with this child for the rest of your life. So do people ever ask for that? And do you do that type of thing?
I have done some of that, but not a whole lot of it. And when people come to me and say, I want a chart run on family members, one of the first things I ask is, all right, we can certainly do that, but there's some caveats. I'm not doing any charts on a kid that's under 18, generally, for a whole host of reasons. A lot of things can kind of shift around. You don't want someone to latch on to one piece of information and then drive that through for the rest of their life and pigeonhole the kid. So that's not something, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. It's just not part of my practice with regards to what I do, but it can be done. And personally, I think that's a good age to maybe start looking at that sort of stuff, unless you're just naturally curious and you want to see what the birth chart is of your kid from a real general perspective. Because here's the thing in VA that's a little bit different than traditional Western or Vedic or sidereal or other forms of astrology. We're just looking at energy circuits. What gets activated is up to us as free will. So even though, let's say, someone has a predisposition to get into art or writing or this or that or whatever's in the chart, doesn't mean that they're going to. It means they have potential in that area. But at the same time, that might not necessarily be the path they end up on. Or conversely, they may be desperately trying to activate some of these circuits. Let's say they feel compelled to do art, but they're in a family that doesn't support artistic expressions. That's when the problems start. Because if we're blocking energy, and I know this term energy sounds woo-woo, but it really isn't woo-woo when you look at the data, because you find that there are certain processes that each of these planets regulate. And when we can express an energy that's really strong in our birth chart, that's when we start to get anxious, disease, potential depressive episodes, a whole host of things have come out of the literature. In fact, at a conference I was at in June March, there was a recent study that was done by a licensed marriage and family therapist in California. And she looked at astro signatures, which is just a $20 word for planetary configurations, to see if they could show insight on people who might be struggling with depression. And they found some pretty remarkable data that holds up at a statistical level, which means it's a lot more than just applying or happening by chance or random. I'm very cognizant of the fact of not wanting to give someone false hope and say, oh, your child is skilled in music, they're going to be a child prodigy. Well, maybe. If they meet up with the wrong crowd, they can end up on drugs and on the street. I mean, I know that sounds a little direct and to the point, but that's where I think sometimes other forms of astrology may overreach a little bit, saying, well, this is going to be your destiny. Well, it might be. But remember, astrology just gives us information. What we do with it is the other side of the coin.
From what I remember, at least from a reading I had a long time ago, somebody who was well-versed in Western astrology glanced at my chart and she was like, oh yeah, later in life, you're going to be doing this and you're going to be kind of coming into your own, you know, not earlier, but rather later in your life, which is unusual because most people hit their stride early and then kind of burn out maybe. So she said, you know, that's good. You know, you're going to be expressing yourself more creatively as you get older. And I mean, how are you weighing this up when you do a chart for somebody? Are you seeing that you can actually dial into when in their life they might do things?
The answer is yes. And so here's what I mean by that. As far as looking at timing, well, let's assume you have the creative piece in you. And I don't know, I don't have your birth date. I don't have your chart. Do you know your sun, moon, and rising sign off the top of your head?
I do. I'm Scorpio sun and moon, and my rising is Cancer.
Okay. So that's interesting as far as so you're double Scorpio sun and moon, and then rising of Cancer. All right. So in traditional astrology, you know, we would say, well, with the rising sign being a Cancer, you're very supportive of your community. You want to take care of those who are close to you, and that's what you put out into the world. Well, that sounds similar to what you're doing right now. Now, the question is, from a timing perspective, well, how does that figure in? That's what we would have to go and look at with some parameters as far as, let's say, from a VA standpoint, we saw things active in your ninth vibe, but the 17th vibration also has to do with empathy and stepping into other people's shoes. And then we would look to see where the transits are activating those particular vibrations, specifically the outer planets, because the outer planets are more long-term cycles. They move slowly, and it takes a longer time for those cycles to complete. So when we're looking at long range, we'll look at stuff probably from Saturn all the way through Pluto. We're not going to look at the moon because it's moving around every day, and same as the sun. So we could look at what aspects are going to be hitting those vibrations within certain time frames, 5 years, 10 years, and see when that part of the board will get lit up, so to speak, which could set people up for potential success when they hit those various milestones based on the transits in the sky. You know, as far as, you know, predicting things down to a day, there's some people who do that. I'm more looking at trends. I look at what trends and what cycles are we in. Moon phase is another thing that I look at, because we all have this thing called a progressed moon phase. And basically, that breaks our life down into these 3 to 3.5 year cycles, just like a moon would be. You have the new moon, then you have the crescent, then, halfway and all the way around. And those different cycles have different impacts on us. Just like a plant in the ground, a new moon is significant of planting a new seed. And then that cycle goes all the way through over about a 28 and a year half period to get us to the point of completing that cycle and then starting it all over again. So that's how I generally approach looking down the road from a timing perspective. It's more about the trends that you could expect and the influences that you can anticipate so that you can address things accordingly as you move forward.
Well, it kind of makes me wonder what to do with Vedic astrology. Whenever I think of astrology, I think, okay, what, you know, I like India. So yep. I always think about the Vedic side. I'm actually sure. A Scorpio in the Western, is it sidereal?
Sidereal, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm a Scorpio in both systems, yep. But a lot of people are not the same sign.
That is
so,
true.
I mean, what do you do with all of that kind of ancient astrology? I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. So you bring up an excellent point, and that is, will two astrologers ever agree on anything? Yeah, probably not, even if they're skilled. And here's why. There are over 30 different systems of astrology. We've discussed some of them already today. Western traditional, which is what most people are familiar with here in the US. In India, Vedic is very popular. There's sidereal. There's, of course, vibrational astrology, which is what I work with primarily. So you've got to stay consistent within a system in order to hold some sort of continuity. In other words, you can't look at your birth chart in Vedic and then go and do forecasting using a traditional system, because you're kind of getting the wires crossed, because each system has its own rule book, so to speak, for interpreting these things. And some are a little bit more loose and liberal than others. In VA, we're hardliners. Either the aspect is there or it's not. It means this, and this is what the potential is, and this is what is the wiring, but it's not a matter of reaching to try to crowbar it in there. You know, there's always going to be different types of astrology, and I know very little about Vedic. And the reason for that is that's a whole nother life study. You learn real early in astrology that you have to kind of pick a lane or two and become familiar with them and really know them, because there's a lot going on. I'm sure you know enough just from speaking with you that you know astrology is like the mansion with 1,000 rooms. There's always something new to learn and discover. So no one knows it all. And there are a bunch of different systems out there, and it all comes down to what works best for the individual. Some people prefer a more Vedic approach, because Vedic seems to be more, this is your life and this is how it's going to pan out. Okay, that's cool. If that works for you, go for it. I'm not going to say don't, but I subscribe from the free the point of action where we do have free will, and we want to maximize those opportunities. And VA comes in there very nicely with the data behind it to be able to set the stage for, you know, what you can anticipate as things are starting to roll by. So, you know, I don't think VA is going to take over the world by any means, because astrology has been around for 2,000 years, but there are a variety of systems. And if you put the same birth chart in front of 10 different astrologers using 10 different systems, you are going to probably get 10 different interpretations.
Yeah, that seems to be some ammunition for critics to disbelieve all of it.
Absolutely. And I'll be the first to tell you, up until recently, no one has done a good job with regards to studying astrology. Astrologers haven't. Astrologers want to do readings and talk to people and whatnot, and that's cool. So they're not doing research. The feeble attempts that academic institutions have tried to do research with astrology, that never works, because the most that they get is they look at sun sign comparisons. And I'll talk more about that in a second, but they don't know astrology. They don't have 10, 15, 20 years knowing what is supposed to be going on here. So they haven't done a good job with it because there was no real good way to codify the information. But that's changed over the past 10 years due to a guy by the name of David Cochran, based out of Gainesville, Florida. And he is the father of modern vibrational astrology. And this guy's a statistician by training. He's got advanced degrees in statistical design. And he knows astrology. So finally, we're starting to see some proper studies done on astrology using a format that is based and grounded in scientific methods. And incidentally, a recent study that David released recently was looking at sun signs and compatibilities of married couples. They looked at 20,000 married couples and longevity and who was connecting with who. And, you know, it's like, well, if you're a Cancer, then you're going to be compatible with such and such. Guess what the research found out?
That it was somewhat right on?
No, it was not right on at all. Sun signs mean nothing as far as predicting compatibility. And now I can feel the arrows coming at me from other astrologers out there. They don't. The data doesn't hold up. Yeah, it may happen sometimes, third of the time, maybe randomly half the time, but it's not consistent. So I know that doesn't sit well with a lot of astrologers. Oh, no, you're out of your mind. I'm just basing it on data because I do believe data and spirituality can coexist. So VA will look at some of these things that have been long held to see, all right, does it work or does it not work? We have an open mind from the standpoint of, well, let's look at it. Let's question it. Let's do some extreme case sampling. Let's build some models and see if the theory holds up. And that's an example of that whole idea of, you know, the sun signs being compatible is going to ensure a long-lasting relationship. No, it didn't break out that way. So it's a very exciting time in the astrology world because, as I said, now we have enabled astrologers to be able to conduct research without having to go to a lab. In other words, there are data sets of like 90 to 100,000 cases that have birth data where we can go and look at planetary combinations based on a variety of factors. And we can pull up in the database psychologists who are famous. We know they're psychologists because they're out there practicing. And, you know, you take your pick, you know, Dr. Phil, this one, whomever, okay? And then we can start to look at, all right, is there any significance in this subset of the population with certain planetary pairs or beyond that, you know, three planets, four planet aspects that are consistent? If it's there, then the data shows that there's some type of relationship. If it's not there, then it was just a theory that turned out not to have much evidence behind it.
Well, I've always thought that the moon sign was kind of critical in understanding what drives and motivates people. I've always looked more to that than I have the sun sign myself.
The sun sign, in my opinion, and again, I feel the nasty letters coming, way overrated. And it served its purpose. Linda Goodman, back in the 60s, wrote the book Sun Signs. You know, she was like the pioneer of sun sign astrology. And if you look online and you look at people doing forecasts, it's all sun sign based. I do daily forecasts, but they're vibrational based. I never mention a sign whatsoever. Going back to your point of the moon in VA regulates our relationship to time. And the moon brings previous experiences into the current situation. And those experiences are things like emotions, habits, mental patterns, routine, things that are at a deep, soulful type of level, the moon has an impact on. So depending on where a person's moon is in their natal chart, depending on what's aspecting that moon can trigger and aspect some of those emotions. In fact, in today's forecast that I put up, I believe the moon was conjunct with Pluto, and I think Venus was in on the mix. So you add those together, there's some potential compulsivity and potential secrets being revealed that have been deep, buried deep within, maybe at a personal level, maybe at a large scale level, just in you know, the universe as a whole. So the definition that you used actually aligns pretty much with the VA interpretation of what it is that the moon regulates. And VA is building on all these other systems. They're just looking at it from the perspective of, all right, people get handed down this information time after time from generation of astrologer to generation of another astrologer. But no one ever asked to see, well, does it really work? Because, you know, you don't want confirmation bias. You don't want something that, oh, if it, that sounds good, just crowbar it in there. The science folks want to say, well, I want to see beyond X percentage of the time something worked before we can make that definitive statement. But you're on point. You know, the moon will regulate emotions and feelings and things that have a real depth and soul to them.
And so you kind of confirmed in part what I'm about to ask, but it looks like you're doing readings, kind of general readings for maybe the earth or a place. Are you doing readings for where you live? Or are you doing readings for the country or the state?
So you're speaking just in my daily forecast, like the 2-minute forecast that I do? Okay. So that's a great question, because daily horoscopes, which basically that's what it is, forecast, horoscope, same thing. I equate those in general to, again, I'm going to ruffle more feathers here, but I don't mean to do that. They're like the junk food of astrology. We all like a bag of potato chips or a donut or a Coca-Cola, whatever the case is. Okay. And sometimes it's great to have a little bit of junk food, but you don't want to make junk food your steady diet. So here's how I bring that back to astrology. The forecast that I give are simply commenting on the energy, the dominant vibrational energy patterns in the sky for any given day. Will everyone experience those patterns at the same level of intensity? Absolutely not. Because ultimately, it comes down to what's going on in your chart and where you're located and what have you. However, here's the benefit to following any type of general daily type of forecast, and that is you can get an idea of the overall tone of what you might expect to run into throughout the day. Maybe not directly within yourself, but when you're interacting with other people. I've often said to folks, daily horoscopes are fine for kind of just checking in and see what's going on in the sky. And if you know your natal placements, then you have even more information. But no one should ever make any major life decisions based on a daily horoscope. You're insane if you do that. I mean, that's just the bottom line. If you're using astrology to help guide your life and make decisions, the only way that needs to happen is in the context of a personal consultation where someone who knows astrology can bridge those connections as far as, all right, here's your chart. This is you, your game board, your serial number. Here's what's going on in the sky for the next 3, 6, 12, 18 months. And here are the things that are going to get lit up in your chart. So I do them because I think it's, and when I do those daily forecasts, we're looking at the major energy flow that is dominant in the sky. Certainly not going to be everything. I got about 2 minutes. So, you know, in those forecasts to just kind of convey some highlights. So I'll pick out the dominant patterns that people are most likely to experience on any given day.
Okay. So would anybody ever come to you and say, hey, I'm going to get married in the coming months and I want to make sure I find a good day for getting married?
Yes. Those are the types of things that end up happening quite frequently. And here's how I handle those. I'll tell someone, I'm not going to pick the date that you get married or that you start a business or that you get divorced or that you, that's not my job. Bring me your options. Well, we're looking at the, you know, the first, second, third, and or you know, fourth Saturday in June. And what I'm able to do then is look at the couple's charts together, look at what's happening on the aspects on those multiple days, and based on that, narrow it down to what makes the most sense astrologically as far as where things are going to be the best to flow with the minimal amount of disruption. So those are the types of things I've had people, and I'm not a medical astrologer. That's a whole nother ball of wax. There are some people who do that, but I'm not a physician, so I'm not qualified to talk medicine. But people have come to me before and said, I got to schedule some elective surgery. Can you help me pick a date? And, you know, sometimes you get lucky and you can dictate the date. Oftentimes you can't. But whenever you've got a range to work within of multiple options, I can tell someone astrologically what makes the most sense. And let's say you don't have a choice and your surgery is going to be on XYZ date. I can still look at the transits for that date and let you know what's going on. You know, when Pluto gets involved with things, Pluto is a little compulsive. That could be disruptive. Uranus can be a little disruptive because it lives right here in the moment. versus Venus, which is what we're attracted to, or Mercury, which regulates thought processes. So yeah, I'm glad we're having this in-depth discussion, because it'll help people see how true astrology works. It's not like just, you know, kind of shooting from the hip and seeing what's going on. And like everything, it has limits. But when we have some dates to work with, or even ranges, because some cycles last much longer than others, we can at least say, all right, this cycle is going to kick in for you here. It's going to be active for the next 2 weeks. Anytime during that time period, looks like you're good to go.
And you mentioned Pluto, I think, earlier. Yes. Pluto is no longer a planet, right?
Yeah, well, we still call it a planet. Astrologists still refer to Pluto as a planet. I know it got technically demoted, but for astrologically speaking, Pluto is not diminished in its effectiveness. Pluto kind of repaves the road wherever it's hitting us in the chart, and it can bring things out into the open, and it can be a little compulsive and intense and disruptive, but it all depends on what it's aspecting with. But Pluto's still out there and very much alive and well.
So on a personal level, if you meet people and you do like a chart on them and say they're, you know, somebody that you work with or whatever, would it bother you if there's no good aspects that your chart has with theirs?
Well, there's no such thing as good or bad aspects. Some are maybe a bit more challenging than others. And I do get a little cringy when I get on TikTok and look at other astrologers. Oh, tomorrow's going to be a horrific day. Maybe, maybe not. It depends on the individual and how things are being connected in their chart. It gives me information. Because, you know, the first thing people find want to do when they find out you're an astrologer is, oh, run my chart. And, you know, I'm happy to do a quick look and take a peek and see what's going on there. It's not so much scary. It's not like you're going to find, you know, the moment of someone's death in a chart, because that's not the type of astrology I work with. And, you know, it's not like, oh, well, if you have Saturn here, Saturn is another planet that gets a bad rap. In vibrational astrology, Saturn, when it aspects us, gets rid of all, well, even in the natal chart, it gets us down to the essential elements of whatever we're dealing with. It takes out all the clutter. It cuts out all the fluff. So it can be a little disruptive if Saturn is strongly placed in someone's chart, or even when an aspect rolls around, because it cuts out all the noise and it could take away our toys or what we've gotten comfortable with. But I love Saturn in my chart, because where Saturn is involved, it helps us build things that last for millennia. I'm running my assessment business for 25 years, and I've got Saturn in my midheaven, which is at the top of the chart, and it's right at the cusp of the 10th house, which represents career. Has it been hockey stick growth? No, but it's been steady, going up, up, and that's how Saturn does things. So I don't like to think in absolutes of good, bad, scared, not scared. It's all right, here's what we've got. It is what it is. That's one of the common sayings amongst vibrational astrologers. It is what it is. Now, what do we do with it? And yeah, there are going to be some people who are more difficult to work with. There are going to be some tasks, depending on transits, that may be a little bit more challenging. But the idea is, what do you do with that information? Because the way I like to describe astrology in a nutshell is, it's not a crystal ball. I'm not gazing into the ball and getting scrying images of what's coming down the pike. Astrology is more like a weather report. A cosmic weather report, but a weather report. Just like when you want to go to the beach on the weekend, you'll check the weather report. It may say it's going to rain on Saturday, but guess what? We have free will. You could still go to the beach if you want and get soaked in the rain. You don't have to. It's not going to make you, but you could if you wanted to. Same with astrology. It's a cosmic weather report to give us a data point so that we can make some more informed choices.
Yeah. So you don't have couples coming to you that are like worried about their relationship once they get their synastry charts?
Personally, I don't do a lot of couple stuff. I like individual stuff. I do a lot of work with executives. You'd be amazed at how many executives use astrology as an adjunct to running their organizations. They don't let many people know about it. I like to think of myself as more of a strategic astrologer, from the standpoint of looking at stuff at that higher level. Not to say that, I mean, relationships are obviously very, very important, but the couples thing, the thing with astrology, there's so many different ways that you could apply this. Some people are specifying relocational astrology. I'm thinking about moving to three different cities. Which one's going to be the best for me astrologically? And those folks would end up consulting with a relocational astrologer, because that's a whole different process. So I don't do a whole lot of couple work. I will get people who will say, you know, you see anything coming down the road romantically for me. And, you know, we can tap into that and see what the aspects have in store. But the whole couple thing, I don't want to deal with it, to put it bluntly. I could, but I don't want to.
I kind of understand, because I can imagine all the people getting, you know, frustrated that this isn't quite the fantasy relationship that they thought it could be. Or
there's a whole slew of reasons I don't particularly work with couples. And that goes back to my counseling and therapy days. And we'll save those stories for another time. Because in a nutshell, here's 30 seconds worth. Inevitably, someone is dragging the other person to that astrology consult. Either the man is dragging the woman, or the woman is dragging the man, or whatever. And you got half the party invested and the other person sitting there like this. And I'm not a preacher. I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything. So I just don't get into those situations. Very, very rare cases will I do that. If I know someone, you know, if someone comes to me and they're on the path, so to speak, and both the people in that relationship tend to be in sync and they're both really, really wanting to be, I will do a couples type of thing, but it's not something I actively promote, because most of the time that's not the case. It's one party or the other trying to get in there to see what's going on here, because something may not be working in that relationship. And then that's going to involve therapy, and I don't provide therapy any longer. So I just tend to avoid those type of consults when possible.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. I completely get it, really. So what about with maybe the future? You know, if you do look at trends, you know, is there anything, I realize that this is not necessarily predictive, but are there any transits coming up for the country, or do you ever look at stuff like that?
Oh yeah, I do. I don't really look super long-term out. I mean, here's the big one that everyone's been talking about, and it does involve a little bit of sign type stuff, but you can kind of see how this actually played out, where you have Pluto recently went into Aquarius back in, I think it was March or April. I forget. I'd have to look it up in the ephemeris here. And it's about the clearing away of the old and bringing new things into the forefront. Look at what's happened technology-wise in the past 2 months alone with this ChatGPT thing. That's not even 6 months. Actually, no, it's not even 6 months old. ChatGPT came out on December 20th. I was using it a week later. And I said, ooh, this is going to be big. From then until March, people are kind of working on it quietly and doing different things. Now, every time you get on Facebook, here's a chat AI, open AI app that you could do this, or ChatGPT to do that. The technological shifts that I think we're going to be seeing once Pluto, if Pluto's going to go back into Capricorn for a little bit. I think that's happening any day now for a few months, just to kind of do some cleanup work. And then it's going to go back into Aquarius for a long time. So I think the biggest thing that is going to affect everyone within the sound of our voices here is the technological advances that are coming down the pike, which have already begun. We haven't seen anything yet, because Pluto, when it was doing its thing during the pandemic, it kind of blew up the whole system. It's like, all right, everyone's going to go back to their room for a little while, which we did. And we're going to have to regroup, and the old system doesn't work, and stuff is being uncovered, and who's corrupt, and who's doing this and that. And it pulls the veil up on things. And it's almost like the democratization of information. Now, we don't need news outlets to get information. You got to find people who are reporting accurate stuff, but there are people on TikTok and Instagram and other socials who are very credible and very much vet the news that they provide, where you would only able to get that previously from, you know, one of your big media outlets. So globally speaking, I think mega, mega, mega changes lie ahead on the technology front. And some of those will be good and others may not be so good. You know, one of the downsides of AI is you can clone someone's voice almost identical. And there's already been some cases where people have cloned the voice of a family member and they play it and say, I need money transferred immediately, and scams could happen. So be aware and keep your eyes open, but move forward is the message.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that so much with ChatGPT, but I've heard about it so much on the news, and yep, I haven't really used it myself much, but just reading about it constantly or hearing about it in a newsworthy context. So yep, I think you're right. I mean, yeah, it's blown up.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much stuff on the horizon that's coming out. It's, you know, remember Pluto it takes Pluto 248 years to move around the entire zodiac. So we've never dealt with Pluto in Aquarius in this lifetime. It takes, I forget the math, but like 28 years, I guess, to get through a sign. That's a long time. And that energy is slow moving and intense. It's almost like, think of it this way. If someone runs over your foot with a car, not going to feel good, but due to the rubber of the tire and the speed at which the car is going, it'll probably cause minimal damage. I'm speaking from experience because I've had the feeling of a car run over my foot before. It's not fun, but it's not cataclysmic. However, think of, instead of it being a car, think of it as a steamroller, like they used to put asphalt down on the hot, steamy roads. And that thing has got a big wheel with a lot of energy and a lot of force, and it moves slow. If that runs over your foot, it's going to take a long time for it to go through it, and your foot's going to be a pancake because of the intensity and the duration that that energy is being applied. And that's similar to, I'm not saying Pluto's going to run over your foot, but just from an energy perspective, what ends up happening is it moves so slow, when it gets in there, it stays for a long period of time and has a slow, deliberate effect on things versus the moon influence that could be here and gone in a day, which is why people's moods often change depending on what the mood might be. The moon may be hitting in their chart. It was for me that way yesterday. I was not having a good day yesterday. Woke up today feeling completely different, and the moon's connected someplace else in my chart. And it's like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And that makes sense. I mean, I look at my chart probably 3 or 4 times a day comparing to the aspects because I'm an astro nerd. I'm always looking to see what's going on. And I don't define my life around it. I look, oh, that's interesting. It's like the weather report. I can't, the weather report is the best analogy I could use for astrology because we don't worship a weather report. We're not beholden to the weather report, but it's helpful when we need it. So why not look at it?
I've used astrology somewhat, but I mean, I don't know that I would, I don't even know that I'd come up with like the best day to get married or any, that's going too far for me. I would just be like, choose a day that you like.
Yeah. And that's fine too. That's the thing. It's like, you don't have to use it and you'll probably have a good day regardless. Some people though, or not. I mean, it all depends on if there's anything really significant happening. There's always aspects forming in the sky. As we've been talking here, planets have been aspecting and unaspecting and interacting with asteroids and fixed stars and a whole bunch of other things. And all that changes the energy flow. But are those all that impactful? Sometimes yes, on a daily basis, but other times it could be rather mundane and not much is going on. In fact, if you look at my forecast, there'll be days when I pull up the transits and it's like, not much going on today. A little bit of energy here. 2 days later, you might have this grand trine that's happening in the sky between three planets, or a T-square. That packs a lot more energy because there are more planets involved. And another way to think about this that people have expressed to me has helped them is if you think of each planet, because it controls and regulates a specific process in vibrational astrology, if you think of them as like ingredients in a cake or a recipe, the number of ingredients, the amount of ingredients, and the combination of those ingredients are ultimately going to have an impact on the recipe of what's going on that you're baking, creating, or cooking in the kitchen. The same holds true from astrological transits. Two planets connecting, you might feel a little bit of that energy. But if you've got 4 or 5 planets connecting and the orbs are tight, which means how much tolerance you have as far as where the positioning is in the sky, if they're like dead on, then that's like a wallop. And it's, you've experienced times where there have been just mega events in history where you could feel that shift, that energy, just something's different. That's usually when something is happening, where there's some major configurations going on up above.
Yeah, it's good to kind of check these things. I could see that I would get totally addicted to it if I were an astrologer.
Well, I must confess, last night I was working on some astrology stuff. I looked at the clock. It was 3:47 a.m. I said, I got to get to bed. For people who are very theoretical and have a lifelong desire to learn and like to examine things and question things, astrology is like the drug of choice because there's always something to discover and it's fascinating and no one knows it all. And anyone who says they know it all, I'd run away from them because it is impossible. Things are changing too quickly. And that's what makes it exciting. As new discoveries are coming out, it's like, okay, we can use this information to provide better consults to clients that are going to be much more pointed and precise as opposed to more generalized type of statements.
Absolutely. So what is your view of the cosmos in terms of the spirit realm? Do you believe that there is a spirit world at all? Or
yeah, I have a hard time believing that when we take our last breath here, that it's all over. I mean, here's where this starts to intersect with physics. And I'm not a physicist. I say that right up front. But I don't know if you recall, several months back, they confirmed, and I'm going to really butcher this explanation here, but they took particles that were initially connected. They divided them, put them in different locations. And what they did to one particle, the other particle ended up reacting in the same way. So let's say they put a positive charge through particle A. Particle B, which was originally part of particle A, expressed the same reaction, even though it was a distance away. I don't know how far it was, but it was enough to be significant. If we look in physics and look at the mechanics of how things are being explained and theorized, if we're nothing but energy, and this is just the suit that we're wearing to carry that energy now, I'm betting that there's something there. Now, what that's going to look like beyond, I have no idea. However, energy is energy, and energy can't be created or destroyed. It is in different forms, and it can transmute from one form to another. Think of, you know, solid, liquid, and gas with water. You can freeze it, you can drink it, or you can boil it. And same physical matter, but it's being shown in different states. So I do believe something is out there in the great beyond. And, you know, one day we'll all get to see what that is.
So you have no direct connection with it.
In other words, like, do I have the ability to, you know, clairaudience, clairvoyance, that sort of stuff? Is that?
Yeah, or just a belief that something is assisting you. The thing about astrology is it seems to be, well, I mean, I guess it could be kind of random in terms of like the pull of things on this planet and all its inhabitants. I guess it could be a systematic type thing, a mechanistic thing, right? But it almost seems like there is some sort of cosmic design, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that kind of leads back to it. You know, we don't know. And that's the big $1 million question. Everyone wants to kind of peek over the wall and see what's there. And nobody knows. But with the best science that we've got to date and, you know, looking at quantum mechanics and how all that operates, I do believe that there are forces. And when I say forces, I'm referring again back to energy, not forces in the dark force or things like that, that do have an impact on us. And the simplest way I can explain that is people say, oh, energy, planets, what are you talking about? When I tell people I'm an astrologer, I always brace myself for the reactions. You know, the initial reaction is you're a crackpot. Okay, fine. Now let's get beyond that. Now let's have a conversation. These planets do have energy. And the most common that we can all relate to is the sun. What happens when we go out on a really hot day and the sun's really close to the earth in the summer months? We feel that energy. We burn. We end up feeling that and experiencing it at a physical level due to the earth revolving around the sun and the placement of it. Now, we may not be able to physically feel the additional energies of moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, etc., but they're there. They're doing something. And if you get into astronomy a little bit and you start to look at the gravitational pull of these different planets and how one planet keeps another planet from slamming into another, it's all a very delicate balance. So even though we may not feel those energies as easily as we can feel the sun, what we're starting to understand is that these planets, even the way far out ones like Pluto, do have an impact and emphasis on how things end up unfolding just as far as the cosmic weather, so to speak.
Yeah, it's kind of like the energy has an ordering structure, whether it's repelling or attracting, right?
Yes.
So, you know, you could look at it that way. I mean, it doesn't necessarily prove that there's some sort of God.
Yeah. And I'm not suggesting that. I mean, there may be, you know, who knows, but there's a lot going on when you really stop to look and see how all this is connected, our consciousness and the collective unconscious and all of the things that we've heard bits and pieces about over the years. The tapestry is starting to get woven together. And you know, we're a ways from, of course, figuring all of this out, but we're heading in the right direction.
I would say so too. So do you have any type of practices from day to day that keep you sane or balanced? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I'd be lying if I said, oh, I'm a great stress manager and, you know, I'm 100% clear and I got this morning routine that lasts 4 hours. Okay. So here's how I get through my day. I'm a breath work type of guy because you can do it anywhere. And it's cheap and it's free and it can help get you out of situations because as you probably can deduce, and you don't need to be an astrologer to figure this out, my mind fires 100 miles an hour. It always has. So my whole challenge or lesson that we learn in this life, if you subscribe to past lives and past incarnations, is how to calm that down. So I'm always looking for those little moments when I can, and it may just be 30 seconds. I think before I jumped on here with you, I just closed my eyes for a couple of seconds, did some of the, you know, 4-count inhale, 8-count exhale, just to kind of get back to the breath. Because with people such as myself who tend to run 100 miles an hour, I'm not sitting for an hour in the morning to do meditation. Not going to happen. Tried it, ain't going to happen. And I'm just not wired to do that. So I think the message to anyone out there, if you're looking for ways to help develop your level of consciousness or spiritual awakening, is you got to find what works for you. And it is not a one size fits all. And I remember a while back, I was working with someone and they were trying to say, well, you have to spend 45 minutes every morning meditating. I said, all right, we're done, because that's just not going to fit. That may be how you do it. And that's great for you, but that does not work for me. So there is a practice available for everyone out there. And it may take you a little while to find it. But once you find it, that's what you end up using. I know one person who, what they do, and they sit down at their desk every day, just for 2 minutes, they have one of those little Zen rock gardens with the little, you know, the stick and the thing. They'll sit there and draw designs. It just kind of gets them in the right headspace and it connects them to, you know, moving the earth metaphorically. And it's almost like, you know, tilling the ground and very relaxing. It can be whatever it is, as long as it helps keep you on the path and moves you forward. There is no one size fits all.
I would argue that you do meditate every time you go to sleep at night.
Well, that's a whole nother challenge that we could talk about in another episode. It's turning the mind off that gets to be a challenge. But you're right. I mean, that's when we process unconscious stuff. That's when memories get consolidated. You know, the brain prunes and all those sort of things. So yeah, that's a measure of forced meditation, but it's much more difficult for me to enter that state, especially, you know, in a fully awake type of mode.
Yeah. Meditation really isn't for everybody, I don't think. I think you have to just get to a space where you can in life maybe dedicate some time to it. But it is hard when you're earning money. You know, everybody has to work.
Yeah.
Presumably. I mean, I'm sure there are a few people that don't, but you have to learn how to either make time for it or I guess get to a headspace where you don't mind being alone with your thoughts when you take walks sometimes or when you're out running. That can be a form of meditation.
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. It certainly can. You're 100% right. And I have to laugh when I see some of these gurus online where it's like, well, if you don't have an hour and a half, you know, win the first hour of the day, win your whole day. Great. If that works for you, my first hour of the day, I'm up and running. I got stuff to do. I cannot sit. I need the sleep more than I need to sit for an hour and meditate. And I would just get frustrated. So why am I going to burn that time out and just get aggravated and get my day off to a bad start when it doesn't fit what I need? I've got other ways to plug it in there. And someone who was a teacher of mine a while back said something that was impactful. And that is, with any type of spiritual practice, it all adds up. You don't need it's nice if you can sit for 30 minutes, an hour, but if you've got 2 minutes, 1 minute, sitting in the car at the light when you're waiting for it to pass, to have those little moments of mindfulness, I think help bring us back. So get it wherever you can.
Yeah. And throughout the day is a great idea. You know, if it is just 2 minutes here and there, if you're doing it throughout the day, it's doing something good for you.
Something is always better than nothing.
Absolutely.
And I find that mantra has served me well in business and in my personal life and in everything. Something is better than nothing. We're having a hard time controlling what we eat. Well, maybe cut out that extra can of soda. Something is better than nothing. I'm not saying, you know, get rid of all the junk food in your house. Do something, because there is something that occurs, and I'm sure you're familiar with this. I'm sure there's a more refined term, but I call it the law of momentum. And that is, like anything else, it's hard to get rolling. But once you start to get a little bit of movement, then it's like, okay, yeah, the start was brutal, but now you start to kind of get in there and things pick up steam almost on their own. So that's the whole point. It's start, do something. And then that could help feed itself moving forward.
Right. Baby steps all the way.
Baby steps. Exactly. Because, you know, if you try to quit drinking, quit smoking, become spiritually enlightened to get a new job all in the same month, good luck to you. Nothing's getting done. But yet you laugh, but we see people who do that. I'm going to, and we know this because they post about it on social media. New living, I'm quitting smoking and this, that. You say, okay. And then, you know, remember the other part I want to do is I know people from, so I know you're from the spiritual side and I know you from the personality and analytics side. And when I see that, it's like, all right. And probably about 3 weeks, we're going to see them post a picture of, you know, a plate of fries and a milkshake. And more often than not, that's the case because, you know, those flash in the pan things generally don't take hold for the long term.
Sometimes the mind wants to accomplish things with broad sweeping gestures, yep. But the body does not cooperate.
Exactly. So, you know, don't push, just kind of go with the flow. Easier said than done. I understand that, but something is better than nothing.
Well, Michael, thanks so much for coming on. I know I've asked you a million questions here today and
I can go for 10 hours. I mean, you know, that's the thing. Astrology is the inexhaustible topic. So I'd be happy to come back again and, you know, talk more specifics so we can look at some charts or whatever the case is.
Yeah, we could definitely do that in the future.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, it's a pleasure to be here. And for folks who want to know more, I'm all over social media. BlueRidgeAstrology.com is the website, BlueRidgeAstrology.com. And I'm on TikTok with dailies and Instagram and Facebook, same moniker, Blue Ridge Astrology. You can find me and would appreciate the likes and follows. And you'll see what's going on in the sky on a regular basis.
Gotcha. And we'll put that in the show notes for this episode as well.
Excellent. Sounds wonderful.
Blessed listener, if you have questions or comments for this episode or any other episode, please leave them at disembodiedpodcast.com. Thanks so much.